Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello.
I thought I could do it, and I couldn't. I was drinking water.
No.
Hello.
You weren't drinking water. You were guzzling cum.
You're so predictable. It's like I always have a dick in my mouth. It's like I'm you.
You're me. You always have a dick in your mouth.
Honey.
Hello. Welcome, everybody, to Broadway Breakdown. This is your co-host, Matt Koplik.
And this is your other co-host, Lil Gurgles.
Lil Gurgles. Little baby gurgles.
I just came up with that, but it's a Sondheim lyric, you know? Yeah. Little gurgles.
Oh, yes. So that's where's the cheesecloth? Absolutely.
That's my rapper name, but also because I was just trying
Lil
to
gurgles.
gargle water.
I think that's a good drag name, too.
Little gurgles.
Little gurgles. Please welcome to the stage, little gurgles.
And our catchphrase, because it also kind of sounds like Urkel, could be like, did I do that? Little gurgles.
Did I do that? I love that. Welcome, guys. So this is not...
Oh, yeah, this is Broadway Breakdown.
Yeah, no. So this isn't our last episode of the year, but it's our last episode together of the year.
Yes.
So there will be one more after this, My Obsession with James Crichton.
I love James, though.
James is very lovely. His obsession is going to be a good one. I'm very excited. But that's to say, I'm also very excited because my little bumbling homo is here in front of me, and I'm just so happy to see your stupid gay face. It's really nice.
It's like, do I want my my slaps with my sugar? You know, it's my compliment with my hey, you look like such a homosexual.
How is that a slap, bitch? No, gay pride.
No, I know. I'm trying to like mask it up. No, could you believe? Could you imagine? Could you imagine if like suddenly after all these years I was like
trying to pass for straight?
Well, yeah. I mean, well, what's funny is we just watched this miniseries on Netflix called Don't Fuck with Cats. And I thought that maybe it was a mockumentary true crime series on Netflix, but it's not.
It's not.
It's actually about how these bunch of Facebooker cat dorks started stalking someone who was filming videos of them hurting cats. And then they ended up being on an international hunt for a internet serial killer.
What?
And it's a true story.
Jesus, tap dancing Christ.
But what's really interesting is they have all these interviews of this guy who's the serial killer, and he's a sociopath through and through. But in different interviews, or like segments, it's weird to call them segments, but it is segments. He was like obsessed with being famous. Mm-hmm. So he would find his way into like interviews, or like he auditioned for like Canadian's version of the Male America's Next Top Model. But every time he would like do an interview, he would make his voice lower and lower. And it was so interesting. It was like so much internalized homophobia and self-hate that this sociopath had. I guess sociopaths can self-hate. Maybe they can't. He hated gay people, though, but he was one.
Well, he might have been... I mean, can sociopaths have shame?
I don't know.
Isn't the whole point of a sociopath that they don't necessarily have emotions, but they understand what emotions are?
I think they can't empathize with people. Like, it's the complete inability to be like, oh, I understand that you were going through an emotion. It's like... Because I think they could get, like, frustrated. Like, there were definite moments in this where he's, like, frustrated or he's... But it's amazing. It actually has, like, a crazy twist at the very end. But yeah, so that's why I'm deepening my voice, because I'm a sociopath.
Yes, you are.
That was the longest setup for the least beneficial punchline. That was so stupid. How are you? How are things?
I'm lovely, Trickster for Kids. I'm just getting over being sick.
Yeah, same.
Really
I've been sick for the last month.
It was... So the New York City Gay Men's Chorus had their holiday extravaganza last weekend. Oh, honey. And, of course, I got sick, like, the week of it.
Sure. All those swapping
of penises.
And, oh, and penises.
There's so many penises in and out. And it's like, how could I not get chlamydia, herpes, gonorrhea all in my throat? But
again.
Again. Like, I'm sorry. It was just Thanksgiving. So there you go. But no, I forgot how much I hated having to always, like, constantly worry about my voice and my throat, because mm-hmm. I did get to go on for a solo for the first performance. No big deal.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah,
she was Buddy the Jewish Elf from Elf the Musical. And, but it's... because...
Is Buddy Jewish?
I'm Jewish.
Well, I know, but...
I made her Jewish.
Okay. That's what I was... No. That's what I was getting at.
I made her Jewish.
Wow. What a brave choice, but I love it.
Thank you so much. But... because I was sick, like, it wasn't the kind of sick where it was, you know, like, oh, a little tickle in my throat. I'm like, I have to be extra careful. Like,
yeah.
Thursday through Sunday, it was every morning I woke up with no voice. Just, like, coated in a mucus.
Gay gasp.
Like, coated in a mucus and, like, went on extreme vocal rest, steaming every, like, for hours and hours and hours.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, 2-3 hours before the performance, I, like, would get into the shower and just, like, force notes out to the point where, like, I was like, I have to get to the theater and be able to sing. So, like, I'm going to... scream until this happens.
Yeah, you Fantasia Barrino'd it.
Yeah, actually, you know what it reminded me of, and this is how you know I'm a faggot, is if you read Patti LuPone's memoir, she talks about with Evita, like, for the last, like, year of her run in the show, like, every day she had to warm up for the show, she turned on, like, every faucet in her kitchen, because she was like, the first 30 minutes of my vocalizing, like, would just be, like, cat noises. Like, my voice was just so ragged. And I was like, yeah, bitch, I get it. That's where I was at.
See, the thing that doesn't make you a gay man is that you've read Patti LuPone's memoir. The thing that makes you a gay man is that you saw Patti LuPone's, like, life story, and you're like, that's my life story, too. I am Patti.
Yes.
Me, Patti.
Yeah, that's...
Patti
that's,
am I.
Bitch, that's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about. Me, too, Patti.
Patti, I be.
Patti, I be. But otherwise, good. I'm actually in a really fantastic mood because, so as everyone knows... in addition to being thirsty for dick, John and I are also thirsty for ratings and reviews on iTunes for podcasts.
I woke up this morning and I was like, Matt's going to read a review. I can feel it in my bone. Like,
the one bone.
The John one has. Bone. I knew it.
Yeah.
I and the thing is, I was like, well, you could just look, John. And I was like, no.
No.
I was like, I'm not going to look. I know that he is going to read a review. Like, I sixth sense it. I was like... I see proud people.
Okay, here's the story. I can't even, like, be upset by any of this because, first of all, this review is just so good. And
is
also,
it a bad review?
No, why it's good. Okay. No, I mean, like, it's a good review. Like, I'm so thrilled to be reading it.
Oh my god!
So the challenge has always been to give me, like, a gay ass review. Like, give me something. I want references to Smile, Sally Murphy, all the things. And this review does all that. Okay. And I also had a warning that we were going to be getting this review. Someone who listens to the podcast DMs me and is like, I'm currently, like, he's like, I'm drafting my review now. I was like,
yes,
oh, this shit's going to be.
Come on, draft.
Come on, drafting. She went to school. So, okay. Cue Lennon the Piazza overture music.
Oh, my God. Now I'm intrigued. Oh, I'm no. like, oh.
This is from Matt245. And I did not write this. This is a different person named Matt, I swear. I swear, guys. I swear.
Sure, revenge of Mike.
Revenge of Mike. Justice for Mike. 5 stars. The title is Gay Heaven.
Oh my god.
And it states, Dear all homosexuals, this podcast is for you. If the name Sutton Foster stirs up a warm aura within your rectum, oh. 1, get an STD test.
Oh.
First of all, STI test, thank you. Yeah. And 2, listen to this podcast from the very beginning. I don't know if I agree with that.
Choices.
Have any spicy opinions on musical theater? Well, Matt Koplik has more than you.
I like you, Matt 244.
Matt 245.
245.
And they're Matt Koplik has more than you, and they're all mostly about the brilliant Carousel revival starring Sally Murphy, the ridiculous stupidity that was Finding Neverland, the slushy cup ballet from Big, or the relevance of Smile and how it's the perfect candidate for a New York City Center revival. Matt 245, are you trying to get me to sleep with you? Because it's working.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think this is like a She Loves Me type romance.
I know.
Abutting.
Koplik serves as the grounding force to John Miscavige's wide-ranging tangents, usually occurring within the first minute of the episode, because I cut out everything beforehand just to get it out of the way.
You're welcome.
There has been a widely entertaining cast of co-hosts recently in John's absence, RIP John, but all of their episodes are so informative and entertaining because John wasn't there for them. He didn't write that part. I added that bit. Because John wasn't there for them. And usually very, very gay. In parentheses, usually. The Sondheim Divas episode is required listening for your gay education. This entertaining podcast is best for your commutes, your showers, or even for losing your virginity. And if you don't agree with my review, I have only one thing to say to you.
I didn't even have to read it. I knew it.
Yep. Wow. All in caps. Thank you, Matt245. That was gorgeous.
Matt, you might be my most favorite Matt I've ever met.
It's true. You're my most favorite Matt, and I have to fucking live with me.
Oh.
Billy, I beg to differ with you.
How do you mean?
You're the top.
Yeah.
You're an arrow collar. You're the top.
What have you been up to in the world of theater? Shall we begin our foyer?
I think we
into
should.
The topic.
Well, should we go first into your Iceland adventures?
Oh, yeah.
Because you went away.
I went to Iceland. It was super stunning. I was very worried because I've never been on a vacation anywhere that has not been warm.
Mm-hmm.
And Iceland, although about the same temperature as it is here, when it gets very windy and the weather there can change the drop of a dime.
A hat full of dimes.
Yeah. Just very, very, very clunky. It can change a lot. So if you get what you need to have, like, waterproof clothes. But yeah, it was stunning. It was only like 5 hours of daylight each day. So that was weird, especially when we landed, because we landed early in the morning. But it was beautiful. If you ever have a chance to go. We saw so many beautiful things, waterfalls. We hiked an ice glacier. We explored ice caves. Big natural holes. Something you know all about.
I mean, you're like Elsa in Frozen 2.
I did feel like Elsa in Frozen 2 in that I had my first experience with Gengina. But so I... Yeah, it was just stunning. We saw plates that, like, literally were moving apart from each other, and new ground was, like, rising. We watched the sun rise over one of the oldest known volcanic field, like, lava fields. It was just stupid. Like, I loved it. The only thing that was kind of sad was that we didn't see the Northern Lights. There was no activity while we were there. But it was...
That sounds about right for you.
Yeah, it was. But the city...
John was there and nothing happened.
Exactly. No, the city, it's just like my brain. Like, I'm here, but nothing's ever happening.
No.
But no, it was just... The city's really adorable. It's super gay. We went... our last night there, we went to their one gay club called Kiki and watched an Icelandic drag show. Aww. We got booed for being American, but then told that it was okay because we were from New York.
Okay.
Because they, like, did that thing of, like, you know, they're like, who's here? They're like, who's from the Netherlands? Who's from... anyone from the States? And, like, the two of us in the back were like, woo! And then someone... I think it was a bunch of, actually, people from England. They were like, boo! And I was like, I know, right?
I know.
Like, we suck.
Although,
like,
to be fair, they're not... England's not doing any better than we are.
It was before they officially, like, sealed their fate in the last, like, week and a half or so.
Mm-hmm.
But I found that very funny. But they were like, New York? We're like, yeah. They're like, oh, no, you're okay. Yeah. We're like, we know.
Ladies and germs, your co-host Matt Koplik saw Cats the movie, The Experience, The Jellicle Journey last night.
Oh, well, there never
was there ever a cat so clever as magical Mr.
Matt Stoffelees.
Go fuck yourself.
Homosexuals.
Okay. Do you want to, like, just full-on get into it?
I told you, you don't have to worry about spoilers here. I guess if you out there are worried about spoilers, you can skip ahead a bit. But if you're worried about spoilers for Cats... I don't know.
If you're worried that there are any spoilers to spoil in Cats...
Right, like...
And then on top of that, like, if that's something that truly concerns you, like...
Talk to someone.
Yeah, or
like,
just, like, go... Or, like, go fuck yourself. One of the two. I truly don't care.
No, I mean, because here's the other truth, too. Like, I will definitely be, like, having a chocolate or two before I see it. And so, I mean, if I even remember it, that'll be a plus, I guess.
So, I did say something a few weeks ago that I would like to apply to Cats, which is...
Mm.
This was about do you remember when I said about Jagged Little Pill? I was like, I can't rightfully tell you that it's good. And if you were to tell me that it was, I'd think less of you. Officially, I now think less of the New York Times, but like that's not new.
Well, yeah,
I mean. Yeah, but like I didn't even read the rest of that review. I read the headline for Jagged Little Pill where he said like they fixed the jukebox musical, and I was like, I can't. If you thought this musical fixed it, like I can't help you. Anyway, same thing about Cats the movie though, like.
Did it get a good review in the Times?
No.
Okay.
No. It's 20% on Rotten Tomatoes right now. Oh, like I know. 32 on Metacritic.
Oh, I know.
But there are, I've read a couple of people who are like, I legitimately enjoyed this. Like, I thought it was good. To which I say, you are allowed to enjoy this movie.
Sure.
This movie is batshit bonkers. And I'll get into, like, the craziness in a second. But if you were to objectively tell me that it's, like, a good movie, I'm like, who are you?
Sure.
Who hurt you and what's your story?
Sure. We have bigger issues here if that's what you think.
If you saw this movie and you're like, no, I actually thought this was well done.
Yeah.
I have nothing to say to you. Okay. So, do you want to be like boring and like dig deep into it first? I'm gonna be boring at one point. Do you want to be boring first and then get to like the trashy trash? Or do you want to do trashy trash and then dig deep?
Oh, God.
Because I've thought about this.
Go deep first and then be trashy.
Okay.
Okay.
So the movie is relatively faithful to the stage show.
First mistake.
So like in terms of like what the basic plot is and then the setting and the like the order of the songs and like the longevity of all the songs. And on top of all that, like the design of the cats themselves. I think we talked about this before. The design of the cats in the movie is really just the design of the cats on stage, but CGI instead of makeup and costumes.
Right.
Which puts them into an uncanny valley. But also, when you're in a theater, there are things that you forgive that you don't forgive on film.
And 100%.
It's just the case of everything, which is why you always, if you're adapting anything to a different medium, you have to ask yourself, like, what does this medium do?
How does it serve the piece in a way that...
Exactly. And, like, if I'm going to make this work for this medium, what do I have to rethink to make it work for this medium? So, like, on stage, you know they're not cats, obviously. But also, like...
What?
I know, right? But there's something about the body language and the design where you're like, I'm going to buy into it for at least a little bit.
Sure. And because also, as, like, theater kids, how, like, if you've taken an acting class even once, you've probably been asked to roll around on the floor like a cat. I am such firm believer of that theory. Mm-hmm. Like, I went to dumb acting classes at a dance studio when I was in, like, fifth, sixth grade. And I'm sure one of the first things we did was, like, no, crawl around like a cat. Like, it's just, you can believe it because we've been there. We've had to pretend to be cats.
We've been in the trenches. But and so on top of all that, I can say with the original Broadway production, the spectacle was so extreme.
Sure.
Like fully immersive. Everything in that theater was designed within an inch of its life. So you like the moment you walked into that theater, you were like, okay, like this is the world I'm about to watch. Like, and it made sense. Also, spectacle is more impressive live than it is in a movie. So like to watch a giant tire levitate 12 feet in the air is more impressive than watching Jennifer Hudson rise 200 feet on a CGI chandelier on screen.
Of course.
Yes, like it's just things like that that kind of win you over. And then you can't substitute the energy of being in the room, of being all these other people. It's just, you know, it's, again, things that you forgive live that you can't forgive on film.
Yeah.
Tom Hooper and Andrew Lloyd Webber basically were like, well, it worked on stage-ish. Let's just do what they did and put it on film.
Mm.
And, you know, throw movie money at it.
Mm.
And immediately it's wrong. Like the moment it starts, you're like, oh, this is wrong.
We're off on the wrong path.
Wrong. Because so the opening scene is, they also like added a backstory where like McCavity is kidnapping all the contestants at the Jellicle Ball so he can be the only Jellicle choice to go to the Heaviside Lair. And there's a scene, and like, so he makes them like, I guess he can do magic or something. I don't know. But he... It's very inconsistent. He kidnaps them, like, makes them disappear, and then they wind up on a barge. And he kidnaps Rebel Wilson, Ian McKellen, James Corden, Skimbleshanks, and then eventually Judi Dench. And I was...
Honey, that's my Tuesday night, honey.
Oh, my Tuesday night, honey. But I was with our friend Mike Bello, and he turns to me, he goes, every famous person in the movie is on that barge. And then Taylor Swift was on the barge at one point as well.
Oh,
she plays McCavity's, like, cohort.
Sure.
So she doesn't show up until like an hour and a half into the movie, and then she only has 6 minutes of screen time. She literally sings McCavity, says one line, and then that's it.
Well, doesn't she have that new song?
No. The new song is for the white cat, Victoria. She sings... Taylor Swift sings Beautiful Ghost over
the way that, like, Demi Lovato sings Let It Go.
Exactly. Ooh. Yeah, it's gross. But so they're like all on the barge, all of them. And Mike Bella turns to me and he goes, every famous person in the movie is in this scene. And I said, this is the most expensive scene in the movie because that's where all the money went. It went to the CGI and Judi Dench. But so the opening scene is like, it's shots of not even London, of just like, the whole movie takes place within like four blocks of London.
Okay.
Just four, like, it starts with Trafalgar Square, but then it like just goes into these three blocks where like, there's a theater, there's a milk bar, there's a home, there's an alley. And, like, it just, everything takes place within all those areas.
Sure.
And so the opening scene, which is legitimately just the overture, like, half, part of the reason they also were able to get away with putting in so much of the music is that they, like, up the tempo to everything. Oh. So, like, we'll do the whole 9-minute Jellicle Ball, but we're going to up the tempo so it's actually 5 minutes. Crazy. But so they do the overture, and it's the full original 1981 orchestration. So it's like synthesizer heavy, up, like ramped up to cocaine, and like crazy Tom Hooper, like steady cam, shaky cam shots all over the place to like give you the sense of urgency. But nothing is happening. All that's really happening is a car is driving with like a cat in it. And a cat's like in a bag. Basically, and the woman who's driving the
cat's
in the bag. The woman's driving the car to like throw the cat out into the alleyway. Like, to which I'm like, this woman went through a lot of trouble to get rid of her cat since she just like threw it out into the alleyway. But so like the idea is that this woman throws her cat in a bag out into the alleyway, and then all these Jellicle cats see it and then circle around it and then cut it open, and out comes the white Victoria cat.
This new character.
Yes.
Yeah.
Our intro to the Jellicle world for this 2-minute scene. Right? So it should be 30 seconds, and you would think like, with no music whatsoever, you're like, okay, what an okay 30-second intro. It is a 2-minute, shaky, quick-cut intro with the overture playing, and it's the do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do- mind. Based of like the heightened,
just the cacophony,
Of the music, yeah, and the shaky cam, and then they do Jellicle songs for Jellicle Cats, and it is crazy. Tom Hooper also loves to do this thing with sound mixing where if 40 people are singing together and then the camera's like close up on one person,
he makes them louder.
Yes.
Uh-huh. I know. I remember. Like, I had a lot of qualms with him. And like, I like Les Mis because I just love Les Mis. But I also was like, oh my God, why did this director make these choices?
Yeah, because he doesn't understand how musicals work.
No, obviously not.
And like, I think there are moments of the Les Mis movie that are actually quite good and moments that are not. I think I've said it before. The songs in the Les Mis movie that work are the ones that I thought were going to be terrible, and the ones that I'm like, this is going to blow the roof off, for the ones that I was most disappointed by.
Yeah.
Like, I thought Lovely Ladies was going to be exceptional, and I was so disappointed with how it turned out.
Yeah.
Same, like, Cats is sort of the same thing. There's nothing great about it. Best case, there are times when it's just sort of mediocre. Mm. Like, the Ian McKellen song, Gus is the Theater Cat, it's sort of just, like, fine. You're, okay, like, watching it, and you're like, okay. And, like, Mr. Mistopheles. Okay. Okay. So there is a gentleman sometimes at the lovely piano theater bar Maurice Crisis who, no matter what song we sing, and I haven't been there in a long time, but like anytime I was there and he was there, no matter what song we were singing, whether it was One Day More or Oklahoma or Take Me or Leave Me from Rent, this man would sing counterpoint in countertenor. So he's a counterman.
Oh.
So like we would be like, take me, baby, or leave me, and he would go, woohoo. He would do that. No matter the song. Always shit like that. In Mr. Mistopheles, you start to hear this like pingy soprano like counter line happening, and you're going, what is that? And then all of a sudden you realize it's Jason Derulo.
Everyone's you're going, like, is that a theremin?
Yeah.
No. So
everyone's going like, oh, well, never was there ever. And you start hearing like, hoo, 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 hoo. And as everyone's gathering towards the camera, you're like, that's Jason Derulo. Like, because he's in like the third row of people in this group heading towards the camera. And you're like, not only is he singing, the only person singing this line, he's like far off in the background. So it's like not even, It's not even like a bold choice. It's just cats. A thing. Cats. And then also, cats. So, okay, and I've already gotten into like the camp factor, but I'm going to go back into like boring, dig deep stuff for a quick second.
Okay.
There's two things that bother me just in terms of like storytelling wise. One is that the stage show Cats is very unapologetic about like, this is the very thinnest of plots and like, just, you're going to be into it.
Yeah. I was actually shocked the first time I saw it, how unapologetic it was about the fact, like, yeah, it's cats.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
But
cats.
And, like, it's...
I was like, oh, okay.
And it's sort of that thing of, you know, you're either going to be on board with this or you're not.
Yeah.
And there's something to admire about that.
Sure.
And I will say, when I was a kid, I did, like, really love the show, and I would watch that VHS all the time, and seeing it on Broadway was, like, a very, like, huge experience.
Yeah.
I saw the revival as an adult after having like not been with it for a while, and I had two thoughts. One was, oh, the music's actually better than I remember. Like, it's actually quite interesting Andrew Lloyd Webber music. And then also, oh, right, it's just this for 2 hours. Like, yeah. It is song after song of just like, we each are going to introduce ourselves as to why we should be the Jellicle choice. And then the movie adds a bunch of dialogue to explain all this.
Right.
Which makes it even worse.
Yeah, I remember that in one of the trailers, and it seemed like, what is the word? A mistake.
What's that thing my mom calls me? Right, a mistake.
Mistake. Yeah.
It's a lot of dialogue. So, like, they were smart to make one character new to it all. So that way there was, like, a way in. Because that's the smart thing about Harry Potter.
Fresh eyes.
That's the thing about Harry Potter that's so smart is Harry is new to it all. So we as the reader learn about the world because Harry's learning about the world. Mm. So that was a smart choice. What wasn't smart was, like, literally over-explaining everything.
Mm.
To the point where, like, half the time you're like, come on, exposition. Like, after Jellicle songs... Robbie Fairchild, at one point, he's like, every, like, a cat will get to be reborn into a new life, and we each get to state our case and who we are and what we do. And I'm like, and then he goes right into Gumby Cat. I'm like, so you wanted to be extra clear about what's happening. And then they added the McCavity subplot, and then the Victoria plot, and then they, like, added a bit more backstories to characters. They're like, who's Grisabella? She used to be the star on the stage, but then McCavity took her, and now she's this. Which adds more questions, because I'm like, what did McCavity do?
Right. Well, he's like a rapist.
Yeah, like...
Right? That's what Trevor Nunn did.
Yes, that's what Trevor Nunn added to it. That's not in the text. That's like... Any production you're doing that's not directed by Trevor Nunn, that's not what it is. He's just like, Bumbleorina, you were raped by McCavity. You're also clairvoyant. So anytime he's within 100 feet of you, you shout, McCavity!
Fun fact that we all just learned, Trevor Nunn is the same voice as Stewie.
He is just a little bit.
It's the same person.
They are the same person. Crazy. And the Mucinex budget on this movie alone must have been insane, because every time there's a close-up of Jennifer Hudson, she is either crying or snot is coming down her nose.
Yes. That was one tweet that I read, was that she gives Viola Davis a run for her money.
Mm-hmm.
When, like, it comes to snot crying.
So much crying.
And I'm intrigued by that.
Well, it's almost to the point of, like, proving that she can, rather than because it's necessary.
Sure.
Or Tom Hooper was like, I got Anne Hathaway an Oscar by doing this, so let's do it again.
It's like, let's rub some Vicks VapoRub all under your sinuses and see what kind of magic we can make.
Exactly. And then one last thing in terms of just, like, digging deep, and then we'll get back to trashing. Speaking of Grisabella, so at the end of the show, Grisabella is the one who gets to go to the Heaviside Layer. Spoiler alert.
Oh, God damn it.
In the show... And so, like, people... The joke about Cats is always how it's about, like, a cult that sacrifices somebody at the end.
Right, because, you know...
Yeah.
They're just killing someone. Like, yeah, you're going to live again and be reborn.
But so this is the smart thing that the show did that I didn't realize was smart until I saw the movie. Or at least in terms of the original production. So that tire would raise, and Grisabella would be on it. And you're like, oh, cool. Like, they have magic. That's cool. That's cool. And then a giant claw would come out of the sky to accept Grisabella into the Heaviside Layer.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
I've never seen the original production. I know that DVD exists.
Yeah, but... I mean, the DVD, it doesn't even do justice to what it was like on Broadway. You can actually watch a video of the Broadway production doing it, and you get an idea of the scope of it, because the claw literally came out of the ceiling above the audience.
Oh.
Whereas in the VHS, like, the tire kind of only raises, like, 8 feet and just stays put, and then the claw comes from off stage, which is still kind of cool, but not as cool as it was on Broadway. Point is, like, the claw, subconsciously, you're like, oh, like, this isn't all just in their heads. Like, there is something on the other side that is going to accept them into the Heaviside layer. One giant monster cat. Like, so a movie came out this year called Ready or Not. I don't know if you saw it. The one that had, like, the bride on the
bride.
Poster.
I didn't see it, but people say it's kind of like in that Knives Out, which I also want to see.
Yes, it was surprisingly quite good.
Yeah, I've heard that from multiple people.
And I am going to spoil something, which is that the whole purpose of her being hunted by this rich family is that it's a sacrifice. Every couple of years, they have to sacrifice someone to this, like, spirit that gives them all the things that they've had. And the end of the movie, like, the very end of the movie, there's a brief moment where you think, oh, this all could have been fake and for nothing, like, and they've been sacrificing people for no reason. Mm. And then they all start exploding. And then it's like, oh no, it is, there was a reason to do it.
They start exploding.
Like, and it's meant to be, like, funny. Ridiculous. Yeah. Because the first humorous part of it is how, like, they all are cowering because, like, it's going to happen. And then nothing happens. And I'm like, oh my God. And, like, it dawns on all their faces. Like, we've been killing women for years for nothing. And then they start exploding. And it's like, no, it was for something. And so it's that thing with cats. And
what a clear moral.
And I didn't realize subconsciously how that worked on Broadway until I saw the movie. Because in the movie, she goes up in, like, a chandelier attached to a hot air balloon. And then full-on just disappears into the sky. You don't see any, like, anything from the other side that's accepting her. She just disappears into the clouds. To which I'm like, that bitch is going to be dead in a day. Like, that balloon is going to pop. She's going to fall to the ground. There's nothing on the other side.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. It's, I'm like referencing things left and right today, but there's also a South Park episode where the boys think that the whale at SeaWorld is actually an alien. Sure. Because the guys at SeaWorld are fucking with them. Sure. And so they go through this whole thing in the episode to, like, put the whale back on the moon where they think the whale lives. And then at the end of the episode, they're like, looking into the sky, they're like, I think Shamu is smiling at us right now from the moon. And then they cut to the moon and Shamu's, like, fully dead. Sure. On the moon because it's a whale.
Yeah.
And in my mind, I'm like, all those cats, because at the end of the movie, they're like, we're all jellicle cats and it's wonderful. And they disperse, like, as they look into the sky and the balloon goes off into the clouds. I wanted an extra shot of, like, the Atlantic Ocean, the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean, where there are all these, like, busted hot air balloons. Oh. And busted hot air balloons with cat skeletons, because all those cats just fully died.
I mean, they had the CGI to do it. Now I'm disappointed.
They did. But they didn't finish until, like, 4 days ago. That's, like, that's the tea.
I actually heard that some people, when they saw the screener, saw a 75% done version, where, like, literally, at one point, you saw Judi Dench in, like, full green screen.
Yeah.
Like, and I was like, oh my God,
that's insane.
What I would have done to have
what
seen
I would
that.
Have given to see that.
Oh, what would I give if I could live
out of these waters? I feel like that's what some people said in the film. Any lingering questions for me before you see it? Because you're gonna see it, and
I'm really excited to see it. I mean, I know it's going to be bad.
Yeah,
I hope it's not. I mean, I guess that's kind of unfair to say. I guess what's more fair to say is I hate cats. I've always hated the musical.
And you're going to hate the movie.
Yeah. And so I'm going to see it because I'm going to support it. And for some people, it's going to be a magical introduction into the land of musical theater.
I really don't think so.
Even if one person...
There could be 100 people in the room and 99 don't like the movie Cats, but you just need the one person to like the movie Cats.
Exactly. That's what I've been saying for years. I'm going to go try to have fun.
Yeah, I mean, you can have fun. I had fun watching it. I did realize after the first half hour that my mouth was fully open.
Sure, well.
I mean, well, oh, honey.
What else is a new?
That's just my DNA. No, I try to go in with everything with an open mind, and, like, I knew this wasn't going to be good.
Sure.
But I went in not wanting to hate watch it. Like, I went to...
Yeah, I guess that's true. I really don't want to hate watch it.
I went to iPicket Fulton Market. Like, I went to a nice theater. I had wine. I had food. Like, I wanted to make it a luxurious experience. I was like, I want to enjoy the experience of watching this, even if I don't like the movie. Sure. And it is objectively not a good movie. It is not well made. It is not well shot or well mixed or well written. The best you can say about the acting is, like, very few people are embarrassing. Like, they all commit to it.
Mm.
But that's the other thing about the movie that's batshit, is, like, how seriously they truly take it.
Yeah.
But they also try to have it both ways. So they have, like, James Corden and Rebel Wilson doing the, like, meta commentary on the side while everybody else is like,
Right. I heard that they, like, it just sounds like they're improvising the whole time. Like,
oh, absolutely.
It sounds like they, like, literally just were like, all right, Go ahead, yeah. Guys.
Do what you want to do. Yeah. It's absolutely insane. The scale of everything is off.
The scales really bothered me in every preview that I've seen, and I was like, maybe it works better when you're in the full world, and I just don't see it.
Because it's also inconsistent. Like, there are times where they are fit to scale, and times where they're too small, and times when they're too large.
Yeah, I was gonna say, sometimes it looks like they're the size of mice.
Yeah, and then the mice look like they're the size of cockroaches. Mm. Oh, honey. Mm. Cock that roach. No, it's... There's something else I was going to say, and I already forgot. Like, I truly can't pinpoint anything anymore because it's all just a giant blur.
It's all just a big hairball.
Yeah, but the thing to remember is when you're watching and you're like, people worked hard on it. It's like, yeah, people worked hard on this. And like,
but we're going to get paid anyway.
Yeah, but also, like, hundreds of people had to sign off on all of these decisions that were made.
Yeah.
And, like, 100 studio executives had to see the CGI for that cat and go, yeah, this is going to work.
Yeah.
Which just goes to show, like, success doesn't buy you taste. Like, you don't have to be good at what you do to become successful. You don't have to be smart at what you do to become successful. So, guys, put yourself out there. McCavity, McCavity.
Make your own cats.
Make your own. But don't. No. Oh, my God. Please, what don't. I would give.
We've had enough iterations.
I want to do a one-man show that's just about the creation of the movie of Cats through a series of conference calls.
Actually, a one-man version of the show Cats might be hysterical. Just Cat.
Cat.
Like, one person playing. Wait. I might do this.
Starring Kat Demery.
Come see my 54 Below show. Not Kat Demery.
Starring Kat. What's her face?
From
Kat Denning. Kat Denning.
That's it. Yeah.
Kat Demery is a girl I went to camp with. Whoa. Sorry, guys. Kat Denning.
Oh, I know Kat from camp. Sure. No, yeah, one person. Come see my one person show of Cats 54 Below called Kat.
Mm-hmm. Guys, if you want to see it for yourself, go see it for yourself. It is an hour and 45 minutes. So, and with 15 minutes of previews, like, take that into account.
That's not horrible, but it's not great.
No. It's just, there are times when you're like, I can see what you were trying to do here, and you fail at it, but I see what you're trying to do. And then there are times where you're like, what were you even trying to do? Yeah. And then other times where you're like, so, like, Rebel Wilson zips off her cat outfit to reveal another cat outfit, but it's not as if, like, she's wearing... It's not even like it's a Judi Dench fur coat where you're like, right, your coat is made of your own skin. It's, she's literally wearing a Buffalo Bill Silence of the Lambs second skin that she zips off and then has like a vest with fur underneath it. And you're like, what?
Are you trying to get me to love the movie Cats? Because now I'm intrigued.
Now I'm intrigued.
Now I'm aroused.
But it's one of those things where it's like, well, it worked on stage because like she had a fur coat on stage that she took off to reveal another, you know, layer of fur underneath. But it's like, yeah, once again, that was theater. Right.
It's easier to suspend that disbelief.
Yeah, no. And it's all implication and yeah, as you said, suspension of disbelief. So, yeah.
Cats, I look forward to seeing you.
You get a toot. You get a toot from us, Cats.
A toot? Very a nice. Toot.
I wanted to toot when I saw it.
Billy, I beg to differ with you.
How do you mean?
You're the top.
Yeah.
You're an arrow collar. You're the top. You're a Coolidge dollar.
I have something I kind of want to talk about, which it's kind of like a... I feel like it's definitely two separate things, but they've kind of both happened. Or I've been reading about them this week, and so they kind of really had me thinking...
That's new.
I know. It was scary. I was like, oh my God. What is this? No, the first one I read was an article in Vulture about this woman who went back to go see. She was like, normally every decade there's like one juggernaut of musical theater that like defines that decade. And she's like, you could
Helen article. I didn't read it, but I've read about it.
Yeah. And so and basically it was like we had two like clear ones this decade, and so it's about her going back and seeing Book of Mormon and Hamilton post like Trump era, like post like, you know, like where we were in 2011 and then 2015 to where we are now, and like politically, socially, you know, woke culture, cancel culture, Me Too culture, Trump era. I mean, we were both we were in Obama era, which was very different. Mm-hmm. So, you know, racially, there was a lot of different ideas that how we thought this nation was going to go. And so I read the article and it was really interesting. I think a lot of really great points were made that I hadn't thought about previously when seeing both of these shows. You know, she really talked about the racism of, like, the Ugandan people in Book of Mormon. She's like, the show is so fucking funny. But she's like, once you get to Africa, it's hard to keep laughing.
Yeah.
Because, yes, they're definitely making jokes. And I was even trying to think with my experience with the show. I was like, I'm trying to remember. But at this point, I haven't seen it in, like, 5 years. But she was talking about how, like, the jokes go from kind of, like, mocking the religion and, like, you know, to making fun of these black characters. It's like, you know, when Nabalungi is typing on a typewriter and calls it texting, is that making fun of, like, just saying that it's, like, a dumb black girl? Or, like, a dumb Ugandan, and, like, all the AIDS jokes and all the jokes about them fucking babies. And so it was really interesting because, my brain kind of split in two, where I was, like, I always took it as a social commentary and, like, the fact of, like, it's comedy. It's extremist comedy. You know, it's like, I don't think these guys were like, yeah, we really think that, like, black people are out there, like, fucking babies and, you know, giving everyone, you know, trying to actively, like, contract AIDS or, like, thinking that you can fuck a baby and get rid of AIDS.
Yeah.
But I thought about, like, the fact that it is, you know, if I were a person of color watching this character say these things, would I be offended? Would I be offended? Would I think that I was being made fun of? And so I definitely saw validity on both sides because I think that for comedy, and especially the guys from South Park, mm-hmm. they've been extremists in everything that they do.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, it's very, they've always been a fair game kind of, like, mm-hmm. comedic team. We make fun of everyone horribly, and we go to the extremes that it's so absurd that you're like, this is not reality, this is just...
Yeah.
But it's said so genuinely, and you know that there's some truth to it, so...
Yeah.
Not truth, but, like, it's just that, like, there are people that either think this, or, like, think that people think this, or, you know, it's so sincere that it becomes the character's truth.
So I haven't read the article. I would like to. I don't subscribe to Vulture, so it's that article limit thing. So I have to wait till January 1st to read it.
Yeah, it happens with the Times all the fucking time.
Yeah. I will say, and I have not seen Mormon since it opened.
Right.
Same. But so before I even get to, like, the specifics of Mormon, from what I remember, I will say, like, Trey Parker and Matt Stone's style of comedy is dangerous only because it is extreme, and they're not always putting their opinion on it. Like,
right.
They will do it from time to time. Like, and when they do, like, it is very obvious.
Right.
But there are times when they sort of just make fun of both sides in such an extreme way that rather than, like, figure out what kind of comment they're trying to make, it more sort of exposes the subconscious of the person who's watching it, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Yes.
So that... And that's the danger of it, only because, like, it makes both sides feel justified. Mm-hmm. And Veep is actually the same way. Mm-hmm. Julie Louis Dreyfus always says how, like, Republicans and Democrats come up to her, like, oh, you got them good. And
yeah.
She's like, it's everyone. It's literally everybody.
Yeah.
Mormon, I actually think, is a little more restrained for them, from what I remember, because I don't think that they are actually making fun of Ugandans. If anything, I think that they are much more... they have more tact with a lot of the Ugandan characters than they do with the Mormon characters. I think the Mormon characters are truly, like, dragged through the mud a bit. Nabalungi, the texting joke I actually remember, and I don't think I never thought it was meant to make her seem dumb, but rather this person who is just, you know, not informed, like, of that,
right.
of that specific thing. And the joke is rather, this is what she thinks it is because no one's told her otherwise.
Well, right. And just the sheer, like, I think it also puts a huge spotlight on the fact that, like, we're so conditioned to think, like, yeah, like, everyone in the world is on Facebook and texting and has Instagram, blah, blah, blah. And there are still people in third world countries that have none of this.
Absolutely. But,
you know, like, and so I definitely agree with so much of what you're saying. And I've read it two times. I read mm-hmm. it a couple days ago. And at first I was actually, like, I was way more on the side of, like, I actually think this person is, like, being a little... you know, spitting a bit of a narrative. Like, mm-hmm. I think they're maybe being a little, you know, like, maybe pandering towards like a community of like of cancel culture or like, you know, trying yeah. to find
of burning it all down to the ground culture. Sure.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, I don't know. But then something really interesting is happening at my alma mater. And it's not an exact connection, but I think in some ways it is. And especially because, although I have not seen Slave Play, and I know that you had opinions about Slave Play, I think there are a lot of pieces right now that are very actively racially charged.
Yeah, absolutely.
And are starting a lot of conversations. So I went to Plain Park University in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and
that's not something to be proud of.
I know. No. Like I really did enjoy going to school there. And so basically, a huge thing happened a couple weeks ago where they canceled their big fall musical. Like it was about to open, and they just canceled it. And like
it wasn't able to.
It was Adding Machine, and so. It was about a lot of, they created a forum, and a lot of students, especially students of color, felt very uncomfortable, vulnerable, very marginalized by this show. And this debate was sprung up because it's like, our teachers or like people keep saying, oh, well, in our careers, you know, you're going to have to play roles of like, you know, marginalized people. Like you're going to be playing historically correct Black characters, which may include playing slaves, and there may be the use of really uncomfortable language. But the students' points, which I thought was really valid, was the idea that that's true. But at Point Park, there it says in the rule books for especially scholarship students, and I had to actually deal with this when I was a senior because I ended up booking a professional gig my second to last semester. But I was a scholarship student, and they were like, you need to still audition for everything. And so scholarship students are required. So a lot of these Black students are scholarship students and were required to audition. And then because they're talented and, you know, and what the show requires, they got cast in it. And then you can't really turn it down because you're required as a scholarship student. And so these kids were saying, like, I get that, and I totally get that, like, I'm going to have to push the bounds of, like, what I may be comfortable with, but they're like, we don't have a choice in this instance. Like, we are being forced into the situation. And so I was like, oh, like, I think that's actually really great that it's canceled then. But then under, like, the final line of this article was, like, students are also beginning to talk about the spring production of Parade and canceling that. And that's when I was like, oh, I don't know about this, like, because actually the last time Point Park did Parade, I was in Parade. And so it would be the first time since, and I don't know if I've talked about my experience with Parade. I feel like I have because of my tangents. Thanks, Mike 245. I feel like I've talked about it before, but like, I actually did not have a good experience with my college production of Parade. My grandma died during the time. My director took me right after I got back from my grandma's funeral. And everyone had been like, you're going to be Leo Frank. And then he casted our, like, Billy Bigelow type as Leo Frank, our Hansing leading man as Leo Frank. Yeah. P.S., this man is a Tony winner and a Broadway actor, but, like, who was directing. And right after my grandma died, he literally called me and was like, I made a mistake and I need you to secretly start learning Leo Frank and I'm going to pull the lead.
But then he didn't do it.
And then he also lied to me about, he was like, you'll definitely get performances as the understudy. It was a whole big mess. So, like, I didn't enjoy Parade.
Sure.
But I also think that it was a really beautiful production. A lot of people really shined in our school. And Point Park does have a good amount of diversity among their students. So, actually, you know, I felt like our cast had a good amount of representation, not just a bunch of white kids on stage, which is really easy in college programs. And so I was like, oh, I don't know how I feel about Parade. Like, that kind of makes me feel weird because I think it has a lot of historical validity. I think that there's racism, but I also think there's a lot of anti-Semitism in it. Like, I think it speaks volumes on a lot of different levels. And you know, like, and then I was like, well, I'll see what happens. And so this last week, an article came out that was from Pittsburgh, and it was like, Point Park cancels spring production of Parade. And so I was like, oh, like, it happened. Like, they actually did. And so one of the teachers posted it on Facebook, And, or actually, no, it wasn't even a teacher. It was a local costume designer that I had worked with professionally in Pittsburgh. And I think he sometimes works with the school, but not a lot. But he's good friends with the director, Tomei Cousins. Tomei was supposed to direct The Adding Machine. Mm-hmm. So he had, like, posted this article and was like, this is really interesting. I don't know how I feel about this. And I was like, I was reading some of the comments, and I read the article, and it was kind of the same thing. The students really expressed, like, you know, where scholarship students were forced to audition for this, and the students made some really good points. But then what was really, really eye-opening to me was a Black actor in Pittsburgh who's still there and works a ton, and he was a year older than me at Point Park, and he was very talented, and we're good friends. We've always been very supportive of each other. Like, I've always, like, looked up to him because I think he's so incredibly talented and just grounded. Mm-hmm. And if you can imagine, being grounded is not something that comes very naturally to me.
No, we're very light in our loafers.
Yeah, and so he commented, and he was in the production of Parade with me, and mm-hmm. I was like, oh, he's probably going to say, like, you know, I was in this production, I felt really, like, safe. And it wasn't that. And he talked about how jarring it was to be forced into... He played, I think his name's Bill... Not Bill Conklin.
Jim Conley, the one who sings...
No. He was the old janitor who, like, actually is suspected to maybe have done it.
Yeah.
But, like, is like, a false witness. Yeah. And it's a pretty big role.
Yeah.
But it's an older man character. And he... He talked about a lot about how hurtful it was to be, like, in this situation where he was playing this older Black, like, character and had to witness so many of his white classmates use the N-word, sometimes at him, mm-hmm. sometimes, you know, like, in the Jim Conklin scene, where he kind of, you know, that's what he said, it disintegrates to this racial, anti-Semitic, you know, the choir, like, yeah. I remember learning the music to it, and our music director had to ask the question, who wants to sing the line, or would anyone mind singing the line, hang him, hang the N-word?
Yeah.
And a white kid raised his hand and was like, oh, I'll do it. I mean, he was kind of like a class clown and, like, you know, like, yeah. I wouldn't say it was done really distastefully. Like, when it was done in performance, it was not. But, like, I remember thinking, like, really weird, like, why would you... It was very weird that he, like, volunteered so quickly.
Yeah.
And like, having a reminder of that memory and then having this actor that I really respect and who I was in a show with... And had a bad experience, but not knowing that he had a bad experience and not knowing that he never felt comfortable enough to, like, express this, was just really eye-opening to me and really kind of, like, connected in a way of, like, okay, what is the answer? Is there an answer? Am I, by making excuses for things that could be, like, racially insensitive in Book of Mormon, is that my own white privilege? And I had also recently just watched Chelsea Handler's documentary, Dear Privilege, It's Me, Chelsea. Mm-hmm. And it's all about white privilege. And it's really interesting because it's a white woman doing a documentary about white privilege. And she tries to interview a lot of Black people, but then a lot of Black people end up saying, white privilege actually isn't our issue. It's white people's issue to figure out. Mm-hmm. Like, we sometimes have to, like, literally comfort white people with their white guilt and their white tears and this. And it was all really eye-opening to me. And I don't have an answer. But, like, I don't know. It made me go from thinking about Book of Mormon and think that, like, maybe this woman was being too sensitive to being, like, maybe I'm not being sensitive enough. You know, I had no idea that this classmate was going through this. Mm-hmm. And, like, I would... if there was a word that was extremely triggering to me and I just imagine there has to be a lot carried along with that, and, like, the fact that he had to hear that and never felt comfortable expressing it really struck a chord with me, and it made me start thinking about, like, crap, am I guilty? Are we guilty? What is the answer? Is there an answer? Or, and this is a big thing in the privilege dialogue or privilege documentary. It's that like white people have to have this dialogue, and it's our
It's
our responsibility to have it with each other and to poke and prod each other. And I was like, you know, here's what that woman was doing in a lot of ways. And like, I think it's good that she did that, because I had never thought about the jokes in Uganda, or once we got to Africa, the amount of racism that might creep in, or that I might not think is racist, but a black person might think is racist. Because, I mean, that was the other thing in this documentary that Chelsea Handler did, was that she interviewed a bunch of white Republican women in the South. And their biggest thing that they said about everything was, well, I don't think white privilege exists because I don't see it. But it's like, well, no, we know white privilege exists. But it's like, so do we do that to things, other things? You know, do we go, oh, I don't see it, so it must not exist.
It's, yeah.
It, and so I and from watching them say that and then reading all of this and going, oh, crap, you know, like, I'm guilty too. Like, we really have to start having this conversation more. And I really want to see Slave Play before it closes. Because I think I've heard really mixed things from everyone across the board. Like, I've heard people love it. I did a play reading a couple weeks ago with a large majority of black people in the cast. And they actually all did not like it. It was actually like across the board. And I was just really intrigued by that, because I was like, oh, interesting. I thought, like, you know, from the way Jeremy O'Harris like talks and presents a lot of things, I would have thought. I just know. I know I need to see it, because I know it's a lot more nuanced.
Well, you also saw Talk Back Tammy.
I saw Talk Back Tammy, yeah. Of course.
Fucking
of course
Talk Back Tammy.
But yeah, so that's my little soapbox end of the year, new decade going in, white accountability check.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's it wouldn't be close to Christmas and New Year's if we didn't have that. I do want to piggyback on that for a second. I don't want to undermine the validity of Helen Shaw's article, again, because I haven't read it yet. I think it's a very important thing to do is to check works that were written in a time of maybe not peace, but less turmoil and more hope, and seeing how they've aged. And definitely with Trey Parker and Matt Stone, like, they A, do not write comedy that is for everybody, and also not always comedy that ages super well. And I do think that it's an important thing to clock. In terms of the parade and adding machine things, I think, I don't know what the answer is. I do think, as you were saying earlier, though, conversation is the key.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't necessarily think that Parade is a show that should just be canceled in general.
I don't think that either. Let me be clear. Well, I definitely don't think that either, because I think there's validity to it as a historical moment of
and
something
I think
we did.
What it is, though, is that it's balanced. So it's, I think what's hard, and again, and I've said this about Slave Play and just in general, like, I'm a white person. That is factual.
True.
Yes, very factual. I'm quite pale. I will never, ever know what it is to have the African American experience. I just will never know. And same thing with the Latin experience and female experience. Like, I just won't know. I try to listen as much as I can, and I try to empathize and constantly check myself. And I always slip up. We all do. We're humans. But I try to really think about it and push myself forward in that respect. I think for me, because this is sort of why I get mad with the queer community every time there's a queer story that comes out, and people are like, well, it's not representative enough. And I'm like, it's not representative enough because no story ever is. The answer is to have multiple stories that tell various perspectives, and then it feels like more like an even playing field.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps the answer is just more diverse choices of everyone's experience with their journey with their ethnicity, with their gender, their sexuality. So, you know, having Adding Machine and Parade in the same season, I think, is an oversight, because it's one specific element of the African-American experience told
completely
in two separate musicals. It's like, have two different musicals where your students can really go opposite ends of the spectrum. And not only that, also have a conversation before you do them, like, before even audition started, like, this is what we're trying to go for. Because it's a school, and you're trying to have an educational experience, both as artists and as people.
And Adding Machine was directed by Tomei Cousins, who was a black man.
Yeah.
Like, I think I said that, but I couldn't remember if I said exactly
But it's that idea of explaining where it is that you're coming from with picking these shows and what you're trying to do and creating as safe an environment as possible. And yeah, I understand completely where what your friend was talking about with the N-word and parade. Like, absolutely, that is triggering and that's traumatizing, especially when it's kind of done so casually.
Right.
And that's... Because then it almost feels like you're being gaslighted. It's like, am I feeling... Yeah. Am I crazy now for feeling so uptight and, like, anxious about this when no one else is? And it's like, right. No. And you always do have to check yourself because it's a case-by-case basis. Not... I don't mean that with, like, all things in regards to race. I just mean all things in regards to life. Mm-hmm. You always need to say, like, take a moment to reflect and go, am I being overworked by this? And then when you check yourself and you go, I'm not... It's just that everybody else is being too casual now. Then it's like, well, we need to have a conversation about this because this is where toxic bile comes in. And this is a big theme in Slave Play, which, as we discussed, I didn't particularly like, but I think is a very interesting piece.
Sure.
Although I did also see, maybe I am racist, because I did see Bright Room Call Day a few weeks later, and I had the same experience where I was like, I don't think this is a good play, but I like this more than Slave Play. So, like, maybe it's just because I'm racist. But... No, I mean it's they both are.
Don't forget to review our show.
Don't forget to review our show.
I might be racist.
I might five please stars. Leave us a review. I might be. Please rate us and leave a review. God. Five stars. I might be racist.
Oh my God.
No.
sound bites.
I mean it's what it is. It's obliviousness and ignorance and.
Yes, it's a lot of ignorance.
Yeah, it's how everybody views things differently. How you and I view a specific show is different based off of who we are, our life journeys, and what led us to that moment.
Sure.
And it's true of everyone. So again, as you said, what I might not view as racist, someone else could. And it's not that either one of us is right. It's just that our viewpoints lead us to that conclusion. And it's about listening to each other and taking each other's mind frames into account.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm trying to be more aware of stuff like that when I'm watching things of like, I don't find this objectionable.
Yes.
Words. Oh, I don't find this objectionable, but it was like,
your
but could
face
someone
during
else?
That was priceless. You were like, I'm dead, dead, dead.
Yeah. There. I feel like there's got to be some Drag Race clip where like one of the queens tries to say a word and they can't. Eloquence, but
flaze da.
But. When I watch it, I think I might not find this objectionable, but someone else might. And
right.
And trying to figure out like where that could come from. So, yeah. I mean, I also, on the other end of things, I think we as a generation, our generation specifically, should have a bit of thicker skin. Not to say that we can't be hurt or offended by things, but that if we let tiny things, and I'm not saying that Parade or Slave Play are tiny things, they are big things. But tiny things, like if I were to call you gay right now and you were to get sad about it, it's like, bitch, get a thicker skin. Because then when I come down the street with like a broken bottle for your neck, like that's something to get offended by, you know?
Honey, how could I have thicker skin when I am just moisturized for the gods?
How can you have...
just silky smooth.
How can you have thicker skin when you're already so thick? You're just so thick. You have
no, that was so bad.
You're thick mentally and you've got a thick midsection.
Thank you.
Absolutely. So yeah, with that in mind, guys, let's start like wrapping up this 2019. John, what are your hopes and dreams for 2020?
I hope I keep living.
I can't even like say that that's a reach.
I know. I honestly like the bar has been set by this year, so it's like, oh, wow.
You made it through 2019, though.
Yeah,
and your hair looks lovely, so.
Thanks, bitch.
2019 tried to kill me.
She didn't.
But just like Anna Kendrick found out, it's impossible, bitch.
What?
That bitch Anna Kendrick.
What did she do?
I don't know. I'm trying to start rumors on all
that Anna Kendrick almost died?
No, that Anna Kendrick almost killed me.
Oh.
We're in that famous feud, you know.
Are you?
Yeah.
When did that happen?
Oh.
Is this on Twitter?
Sure.
Okay. I don't follow John's Twitter. No, I thought you were going to make a camp reference. The she's fucked, I'm ready, and the goddamn show must go on. So
no,
let's get cracking, shall we?
No, I was just starting false rumors. Yeah, no, my goals for 2020 are just kind of the same thing as they always are. Just... joy,
mm-hmm.
Laughter, love, food, friends, I want to write more. I think I want to get like a weird hobby. You know what I mean? We were talking to someone the other day and she was like, yeah, I have to go to my knitting club. And I was like, oh my God, she has a hobby. And then she was like, and tomorrow I have my synchronized swimming club. And I was like, oh my God, that's right. We live where there's a place where there's so many things to do. Mm. So part of me wants to get a hobby, but I feel like my hobby is just going to be like, weaving. Like I don't normally do social hobbies. What about you? What a weird note to end on.
No, but I mean, it's because it's our last one before 2020, or the one last one with the two of us.
No, I mean, like, what a weird thing to say, like, I hope to do something, but it involves no one else but me.
Yeah, no, that sounds about right for you. Yep. I hope to continue this podcast. I hope to continue to phase you out of it.
I mean, we're getting close.
We're getting close. No, this has been a very productive year with the podcast. We definitely produced the most episodes in a year ever.
Yeah.
Which is like good. I feel proud of us on that. Yes. Continuing the work and writing. I would like to finish two projects that I sort of have had on the back burner. I'm like going to be gung-ho about that. And just sort of like, you know, try to create more sense of my life. 2018 was a struggle. Mm. And 2019 was a lot better, but it was more sort of like 2018 created the debris, the damage. And then 2019 was just sort of viewing the damage and assessing.
Yeah.
I can't really say 2019 was like a great year, but it was sort of like I was able to sort of view everything in my life right before 2020, before I turned 30.
Ew.
I know.
How old?
She's old, bitch. And yeah, I've 2019 is actually starting to end on a nice note. The chorus was a very good decision to make. Yeah. I've made some lovely friends. I can't help but notice that John didn't come see me perform. It's fine.
I'm sorry. I thought about it, but I've been so sick too. Like I literally, one of the reasons why too, like last time we recorded, like I was so incredibly sick, yeah. But I knew that we had to record and I had no other time.
Yeah, like, no, you didn't look great.
I didn't feel great. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
So I've just been sick the whole time. I mean, I still have a cough, but like, I'm sorry. I would have. I'm a bad friend.
Like I said,
the things that I like most involve
not people.
No one.
Yeah. Bitch, I'm the fucking same. And I'm trying to think what else. I don't really know what 2020 has in store for me. I'm trying not to put expectations on
anything.
Well,
if you did, you'd be a witch and I would burn you.
Just like Anna Kendrick. Just like that episode of Twin Peaks, I assume.
I've never seen an episode of Twin
Neither
Peaks.
Have I. But I, from what I understand, everything has always happened on that show.
Sure.
So sometimes my friend Christine and I will say to each other, like, after something weird happens, we're like, just like on Twin Peaks, I assume.
Great.
I assume. And yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think for our listeners out there, for you, I wish you the happiest of holidays. I guess we both wish you. I'll speak for the two of us.
And thanks, Daddy.
Not just me. We both wish you the happiest of holidays. And as you are going into your 2020, just remember to carry on with light and love and tell your friends about the podcast, because and, then we'll get more listeners.
Yes, and rate us and subscribe and review us. I've said it before, I'll say it again. It helps. It helps with the algorithm of iTunes. The more ratings we get, the more views we get.
And it helps with my algorithm, honey.
The algorithm of the night. Anyway, yeah. So that's all we have to say.
That's it, guys.
Let's get ourselves a diva. Diva today.
You pick. I feel like I've picked the last couple times, even though you've then told me that I've been like wrong. Or
you've been wrong. Well, no. Like, it's a wonderful problem to have, where we are now getting to a number of episodes where we're starting to repeat ourselves, or like we're coming up with people we've done before. And that's a fun problem to have, where it's like, oh, we're starting to like accumulate a large number of episodes.
We're getting old.
You know what? I'm gonna continue the drama and pick Miss Anna Kendrick.
How dare you?
How
like,
dare I?
What
if it was just a random one from Into the Woods of the Quick Little Birds, Pick Through the Ashes?
I would love that.
Little girls. No, that line's not in the movie. No, but I'll do Anna Kendrick. I'll figure out which one I want. Exactly. All right. Thank you, everybody. Thanks
all right, I'll see you in 2020, guys.
See you in 2020. Bye.
Merry Christmas.
I finally got something right. The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com and, of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.